Hey, hi, I'm Nikki Moran. Welcome to The Pulse, interviews with creative individuals who've been successful in their field. I'm speaking to Julie Howe today, who is a creative director of set design and events, who's known in the industry for being an out-and-out risk-taker whose projects pay off. She's highly sought after because of her amazing and daring designs. Clients have ranged from Disney to British Gas, and she currently works with the elite of the interiors industry. She's described as a visual magician who creates the impossible. She sees herself as a channeler of wow and visual magic. Her projects have included wrapping up a whole island near Sri Lanka in red silk cloth to launch a fabric range for a British company called Malabar. The campaign was so successful, the company won contracts all over the world, including the States. After that, she went to Morocco, where she wrapped up a Casbah in blue fabric. And if you don't know what a Casbah is, it's pretty much a castle in the middle of the desert. So, Julie.
Hello.
Hello. How can you follow that?
Well, with my next project. No.
And what is the next project? What are you going to wrap up next?
Well, I've just finished one where I built a giant house of cards.
Wow.
Each card was 2.5 meters high, and there were 200 of them. So they all stacked up. That was pretty amazing. I was really pleased with that.
That sounds amazing. And what was the idea behind the cards, and what was it launching? What was it for?
It was at it was built as part of a trade show out in Paris. It's the best interiors show in the world for the industry, and the client is Andrew Martin, and he's an amazing individual and has had a huge influence on the industry, and I've worked with him for about 7 years, and he's got the same go get them kind of attitude. It's great.
I'd love to know about the journey that you've been on, Julie, because obviously you're incredibly successful now. You work with the top of the interiors industry. People really, you know, you're highly sought after. I know that Ralph Lauren UK has just approached you as well, which is fantastic.
Yes, they have. Yeah.
I'd really love to know your journey and how you got to where you are today.
Gosh. Okay. Well,
going back to the kind of how it all started.
Well, I through school, I mean, I was always a sort of good all-rounder. I was never particularly good at any one thing. And I went on to do science A-levels and with the idea of becoming a vet. And then it was when James Herriot was popular and everybody wanted to be a vet. So I didn't get good enough grades to get into university. And all my friends were in the art department. So I used to go and hang out upstairs in the art department with them and started drawing. And when I didn't get into vet college, I went to do art foundation, sort of almost as a fill-in. Mm. And there I met some amazing tutors and really got my first exposure to the art world. Mm. And there was this whole area. And I just went in very innocently, and I thought, wow, this is great. I wasn't particularly interested in getting, you know, like a great degree or anything. I wanted to sort of try everything. Mm. And so I had a huge curiosity.
Did you have an absolute natural talent for it, Julie? Was it clear that you were very good at this at that age?
No, not really. No, I wasn't particularly good at drawing, although I could get the basics down. Mm-hmm. What I was good at, I started to say, was seeing the whole picture. What the whole thing needed, you know, what a whole project needed in order to get off the ground.
Right.
And what the end result should be. So quite often if I come up with a concept, I think, okay, I want to see that island there with, you know, covered in fabric. That's the end result. So how do I get there?
So you can kind of really visualise that.
Yeah, I have to have the end result in my head. It's like having a baby, I always think, because they kind of take about 9 months. And you know, so I have the concept. Then I have to find the right people. Mm. And I would say that a lot of the work that I do, I mean, it's 10% inspiration or even less than that. Mm. And then the rest of it is perspiration. It's finding the right people.
Mm.
And I think I get the work that I get because I deliver what I say I'm going to do on time.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, I think early on in my 20s, I kind of got it that saying yes rather than no was the way to... And I'm quite often, I mean, even now, I say yes to something I've never done it before.
Mm.
And you know, and the thrill really is like, well, I have to pull this off.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to find the people who know what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
work with them. So I learn a lot on each job.
Mm.
I don't have a set of skills that I apply. I have last job we did a lot of wallpapering, for example, very extraordinary wallpaper. I don't put wallpaper up, but I find the best people who do.
So
it's how do I get this thing that's in my head to be sitting outside of my head in front of me?
Mm. So it's a concept and then the kind of bringing it all together, bringing people that you trust and those that can actually make it real.
Yes, that's right.
So take me back to, you went to art college.
Yes, I went up to Goldsmiths, which at the time was, it still is a very good fine arts course.
Mm-hmm.
And that I specialised actually at that point in textiles.
Mm.
In fact, for my final show, I made furniture that walked around a room with lots of with clothes inside, you know, wardrobes and things.
You had furniture that walked?
Yes.
That time, did you stand out as somebody who did quite risky, daring things?
Not particularly, because, I mean, all my peers at art school were all doing completely extraordinary things. I mean, Damien Hirst, you know, he was in my class. So he was pretty amazing guy. You know, all of the Brit art scene came out of those 2 years at Goldsmith. So, you know, I had high standards around me.
Yeah.
And and I got it really because that it's about ideas, not about the finished product.
So
that college was very influential to me. That what I learned at art school was how to have ideas and how to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about becoming the best painter in the world.
Oh.
It was a bigger field than that.
Right.
I mean, obviously, some people did do that, but then, leaving college, the first day out of college, I got a job with Disney on Roger Rabbit. Which
was that unusual, Julie, to get a job of that caliber? Straight from art school.
I think it would be now. But I don't think it was then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was about what I'd learned was to put myself in the right place and say yes.
Tell me about that then, because some people who will be listening to this interview might be struggling, want to get their work out there.
Yes.
Haven't quite had the breakthrough. What kind of things did you do
to
create that?
Okay, well, I'd got my sort of heroes and people whose work I admired. Mm-hmm. Somebody like Peter Greenaway, for example, film director Peter Greenaway. So I wrote to their office and they were making a film part of the film in Alpert Elstree. And they invited me to come and have a look and would I work for them and painting sets. So I said yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was absolutely no money in it. And I made the mistake initially of asking for my travel expenses and got told no. And then they said, well, you know, I don't care. You know, great. I'll come and work. You know, so I effectively worked on it. But
must have looked pretty impressive on your CV.
Yes, although I don't have a CV. I suppose I don't seek employment from people. They see my work. And it is another thing is being a person who is willing to do what it takes to get the job done. So if that means being up all night through the night, then you know, so it's a willingness, I think, and an excitement and a desire to see the project come to fruition.
So there's something in you that's very reliable as well, Julie. So as well as being a good kind of ideas person, you're somebody who absolutely delivers, just like any really good business person.
Yeah, I mean, if a show is opening, you can't say, I'm sorry, I'm not ready, you know.
And are there artists who have a reputation of not sort of delivering on time?
Yes, I mean, I think every industry's got that. I mean, every actors guild or whatever, they have prima donnas and people who don't turn up on set. And it's part of their persona, you know, but I don't sort of do that. I mean, there was I used to work for EMI and do sort of modelling of new bands that would come along, and sort of styling new bands, you know, young bands, and quite often they wouldn't turn up, you know, because it was kind of the rock and roll lifestyle. And I'd be sitting around kicking my heels thinking, well, I could be doing something here. And also, you know, I've done my fair share of working under people who are tough, and I see that they're tough and they get the job done. So I learned a lot from the people that I had the great luck and fortune to work under.
Yeah, so you could see, to, in order to make it, you have to be, you have to really deliver and be hugely resilient. So tell me about the job at Disney then. So that was your first job. How did you get it?
Okay, one of those magic situations. I was living in a council flat with a load of girls from college, and we had a squatter who lived next door, and he'd come down from Scotland as a trained animator to absolutely to work on this film called Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and he had no food, and he used to come and eat with us. And I said to him, you know, well, you know, what was going on? He said, well, you could do it. So he showed me how to do it in an afternoon, and I went up to Disney and had a trial run of it. And they said, yeah. And they were also doing training programs.
Oh, my goodness.
So I got a Disney training.
So it was really just through a contact, somebody who was working there, and you thought, well, okay.
And it is about contacts. It is about people. You know, it is.
Tell me about that then, about contacts and people, because I think that one of the things I hear from people is they have a real fear around kind of networking or being pushy. What's your take on that?
I think that if you're passionate about what you want to do, I think that is the most attractive thing to when somebody's looking for people to work with. Now, I get a lot of students now that come up and see me and want to come on jobs and work experience and things. And I always take them. And it's very interesting, you know, that some people are willing to do what it takes and some people aren't. And that really, I know that I was a person who would be there before everybody else got there. And, you know, I would, you know, I put myself in the picture. And that is... Was it Noel Coward who said 70% of success is just turning up?
No, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And just being, yeah, getting there early.
Yeah, well, just turning up, being there, being somebody who's there. So, just being willing to do what it takes. And also, I also interview a lot of people to work with, and quite often, these people, so many people have got such wonderful skills, but I look at somebody and think, well, do I want to spend 12 hours a day with these people, with this person? You know, so you've got to be, you know, great, and you're you know, I you will be great if you're doing something you want to do.
About and focusing on the stuff that you're actually really passionate about. Because is that what you did, Julie? Did you kind of channel in all the stuff that you love?
Looking back, I think if I thought something sounded or looked exciting, I was attracted to it. And I went along, and I you know, I would always ask and be terribly polite, and, you know, obviously sometimes people said no. But, you know, I remember going to an advertising agency and saying, I understand you're making a commercial. Do you mind if I sit at the back and watch? I'm really interested. And they loved it.
Oh, really?
You know, so, but because I was coming from a place of really being interested.
I've heard that before.
They wanted to include, you know, they want, because, you know, it's long and hard work. And if you're a person who's up for the journey, people want to be around you.
And I guess if you're passionate and genuinely interested, that kind of feeds other people as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
They'll get your energy and they'll think, oh, I want this person to be around. You know,
And also, you know, if you're stuck out in the middle of Sri Lanka or in the Sahara somewhere, you've got to be a great team member. You know, there's no, you know, there's no sort of hierarchy, really. And the goal is the job.
What have been the biggest lessons for you over the years, Julie, in your journey and developing this career?
Well, creatively, when things, I mean, on every job, there is always a crisis.
Oh, is
there? There's always something that think I can't, something starts to go up, and I think, oh, you know, that doesn't look right. I think we will take it down. I think we'll turn it round a bit. So it's working on my own ideas, working on myself and my own ideas. So I'm really strong about it. Mm. That's what I've learned to do. So I can go in and there's maybe 50 people, and getting those 50 people to do what I want them to do on time. And everybody stays healthy, happy, you know. I mean, I cook for my crew while I stand.
Do you?
Yeah, they've made me a little kitchen, and then we bring it out on jobs. And while they're doing all the heavy, hard work, putting the floors down, all sorts of things, I stand with a wooden spoon cooking lunch, pointing with it.
Oh, my God.
So, and we, you know, and they like that because it's kind of like I'm taking care of them and they're taking care of my job. So,
yeah.
You know, so that's because, so that works. To take care of people and create a team spirit, because I tell you, if you've got a great team, you can do anything.
Mm.
And these guys I work with, I've worked with them since 1996, and they're very loyal, and they'll
because you treat them good, Julie. I'm not surprised.
That's right.
They're loyal. You cook for them, lucky
God. I know. Apparently, I'm the only client of theirs that does.
Sticker,
and also,
they?
I tell you, being a woman as well, I mean, there's very few women in my arena. There's lots of stylists, but to take on the responsibility, I suppose it's the other thing. I'm willing to say, yeah, let's do it. We can do this.
What's been the journey from back then, from your first job at Disney to where you are now? Because now, God, I had no idea you had 50 people doing, you know, the project work. That's incredible. So what was in between that, Julie, from back then?
Well, having worked in Disney, and then the film finished, Roger Rabbit finished.
And what were you doing? Sorry, I don't think you mentioned that before.
Oh, I'm sorry. I started off as a paint and tracer. And then I went into animating. It's actually called in-betweening. I was never an animator. That takes a lifetime to become. Those people are just extraordinary. Mm. So I was a part of a team behind the crew that drew Jessica Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, learning, you know, wasn't just that, but I would have my eyes open all the time about how the film was being put together, how the colours were decided, watching the director of the whole thing. And
so it
sounds
like you're a real learner the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, it was so exciting to be part of this thing that was creating this groundbreaking film.
Mm.
And it was great. So Roger Rabbit finished, and then I went and worked on animated commercials in and around Soho.
Mm.
And I knew by that point I wasn't a great animator. You know, I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life. And then because I was starting to mix in film circles, I got a connection to working on a film that was being shot in India, live action.
Mm.
So I said, yes, I'll go. No money. They paid my fare out there, I think. And I just worked over there on this film, this Australian film.
Mm.
And then whilst I was there, we were using edit suites in film, Indian film studios.
Mm.
I started to be asked my opinion by Indian film directors. They'd say, "Oh, this is we're shooting a story. It's a film. It's filmed in a flat in London. Can you tell us if this looks like a flat in London?" And it would look something like Buckingham Palace. And I would say, "No. People don't live like that." So I started advising, you know, well, this is a Western interior, and you know.
Yeah.
So I ended up working in Bollywood with, you know, being there for another, I think it was just over a year, advising on Western interiors, I suppose. And that was really interesting because, I mean, it's done so differently. An Indian film director will be working on 12 films.
Oh, how interesting.
You know, it's
like
a factory out there.
Yeah,
So, and that was where I started to say, well, actually, I think we should have this huge door made. And it would be made overnight. And then the next day where there would be this huge door. And I got into seeing the magic of sets. And how
in Bollywood, wow.
Yeah. So that was so incredible to be out there and meet, you know, well, almost incredibly industrious people.
Yeah.
It's a huge industry out there.
Yeah,
huge. And then I decided I wanted to come back to the UK. And there wasn't a lot going on film-wise in the UK, so I sort of kicked around for a bit.
Yeah.
And went to live in Nottingham, where I went to live near, you know, with friends up in Nottingham. And I met, while I was up there, the most extraordinary couple. They were in their 60s at that point, and they were completely bonkers. And they had an interiors business. And, well, I went to work for them, and they taught me everything I currently use now.
Oh, how extraordinary.
They were so out there, these two people.
Mm.
They used to fight all the time, scream at each other. They're married for years, you know. And they, things like, you know, the Nottingham Forest football team would, you know, they'd be transferred from Holland or something. They'd want some kind of crazy interior. So, of course, I could bring my craziness and outrageousness to their homes. And I started to do that. And I started to get a bit of a reputation in the Midlands.
Yeah.
And then some London companies heard about me.
And I
got asked to do shows in London. And that's when my...
Is this the first time your kind of crazy, eccentric side came out then? Or was that already bubbling?
No, it was the first time I'd been let loose with it.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it was the first time. And it was working with people in their homes, you know, which is another very difficult arena.
Mm.
You know, very difficult. So we started to create some very, very outrageous interiors.
Mm.
And then I took that down to London to some of the big interior shows there and got picked up by the interiors industry, really.
Mm.
And they that forms 50% of my work.
How incredible. So it's really kind of a chance encounter, really, that you developed this style. If you hadn't have met this couple in Nottingham, do you think you would have eventually got there?
Yes, I do. Mm. I just said these two speeded it up, and they always said I was the daughter they never had, and they really took me under their wing. And they grew up in the swinging 60s with all the, and then the 70s with all the outrageous interiors there.
Yeah.
And I learned the history of I just learned so much from them. And the father of the, because it's a family business.
Yeah.
He used to, and we get difficult customers in sometimes, and he used to hide behind sets of curtains round where I would work. And I'd see this finger come out, and he'd, like, wag it if I was to get rid of that person. You know. And sometimes he would turn up to work in this beautiful, this amazing shop, right in the middle of the night, and he'd be dressed in Ringmaster's costume.
Oh, fantastic.
And I mean, they're totally bonkers, and I absolutely loved it.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, and it's the bottom line is sort of creating delight for people in their homes and then to take it on from there. So.
And then you moved back down to London then?
Because one of the companies that I was doing the shows for offered me a job. I'd been in Nottingham about 10 years and I decided to come back to London. So, I came back to London and became the creative director of one of these companies.
Because it's such a contact-led industry. Do you think you need to be in London to...
Well, I think, you know, in the 90s, but not now.
Mm.
Not now. I mean, I know, I understand the struggle that students have when they come out of college. And you know, it can seem very daunting.
Mm.
But it's like, to get your... If you really want to make it, if you really want to do something, you'll do it anyway. You don't need anyone's permission. If that's really in your blood.
What would be your advice then? Somebody maybe, you know, it could be somebody who's been doing it for a while and hasn't quite broken through. What would be you know, a big tip from your experience?
Right. Well, I meet people like this all the time, and I'm asked to, so, you know, they ask me. It's normally because they're trying to please somebody other than themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's my experience of myself is that the more that I drag out of myself as the source, the more successful I've been.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Paul Smith, the clothes designer, he's got a great attitude to copying and stuff. The world is so full of ideas, and what's wrong with the whole world is everybody copies everybody else.
Yeah.
Whereas in fact, what we need to, you know, the whole world in many areas, we need to start doing things differently, and that starts with us.
Mm-hmm.
So he finds inspiration everywhere, and you know, I've also know companies where, you know, they compete. One brown sofa isn't similar to another brown sofa, so it comes down to price.
Mm.
Whereas if you design something amazing, it comes down to the design.
It's so interesting, Julie, because there's one kind of way of looking at it, which is, well, what do the public need? What are their needs and wants? You know, and let's do something that they actually need. But you're actually saying the opposite to that, which is stay true to your own ideas and just come from what you want to do.
Yeah, and you know, what is not taught at college is that it doesn't just arrive. It's a journey.
Mm.
You know, you don't come out of college with the idea that you're going to live by for the rest of your life.
Ah, that's a great point.
You know, it's a journey, and people are, you know, in our sort of quick fix society and just go out and do it. And, oh, I'm a designer. And no, it doesn't happen. It takes a long time to get to know your market, who's going to buy your stuff, why they're going to buy it.
Mm.
And that takes, you know, you've got to be in for the ride.
And it sounds like you kind of really went with your nose, Julie. What I'm hearing is your journey was wherever you felt passionate about or wherever you were drawn to, you kind of went with it.
Yeah.
And kind of soaked it up and really enjoyed it. And then you were led somewhere else. So it was a very, it kind of came from your interest and your passion.
Yeah.
And then you found your own journey or your own style out of that.
Well, my experience is that there's nothing more powerful than a person who is engaged with their passion. You stand in front of someone and they could be talking about nuclear physics, something you don't understand, you know, I wouldn't understand.
So true.
But, you know, if they are if they're with that, it's fascinating.
Mm. Yes,
and
yeah, and you just want to know more because they draw you in with their energy.
Yeah, it's like, wow, what's this person seeing that I'm not seeing?
Yeah, yeah.
And for my reaction is, I want to see it too.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I try and get into my work. If I do something and somebody walks past and they don't even look at it, I failed. If they stop in their tracks, their mouth comes open and they look up, I've done my job.
Yeah, what is your intention with your work?
My intention is to create spaces for transformation. Now, that is very, you know, that sounds very, I don't know, pie in the sky, I suppose.
Mm.
But what I enjoy, and I know that what the participant in my work enjoys, is to go into somewhere and to be genuinely moved or delighted.
Mm.
Or amused, or because if they walk in and they see something and they start laughing, you've got them.
Mm.
You know, so a show I did last year, I built a 30-foot high elephant made of floorboards, and he was huge. I called him Jeremy. I mean, he was, you know, he was our pet.
There's a lot of humour in your work, isn't there?
Completely, yeah. So, you know, and what I do is the show is open and I just stand on one of the corners of the stand, you know, of the area.
Yeah.
And I just watch people and I watch their faces.
Mm.
So, you know, that's how I get to know my market, really.
That must be thrilling for you when you see
the
reactions.
Mm. It is, you know, because I just fade away into the background and I just watch.
And you just go, wow, it worked. At the beginning of each journey, Julie, what's that like when the client first comes to you? Tell me about that experience and the process that you've been through.
Okay, well, it depends where they're coming from. If they're coming from like a car company or a big, you know, corporate type thing, people they would only approach me really having seen something else.
Mm.
So, for example, Aston Martin got in touch with me because they saw something I did for Ford.
Mm.
And at car shows, they have this thing where they design a new car and then there's a bit of a show and they reveal the new car. It's called The Reveal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was asked to wrap up some new Ford cars to look like chocolates in Switzerland for the, you know, for the Swiss car show.
Mm.
And people were walking in and laughing, and all the people I was working with, they say, well, they never laugh at car shows. It's, you know, it's far too serious. But people were really enjoying laughing, all these sweets rolling along. and then they could open the sweets up and find the car. So, you know, that was different, and that became, you know, news.
But do you ever have to wrangle with your customers? Do you ever have customers where you have to convince them of something which is quite radical and unusual?
Yes, but I'd never have a wrangle. By the time I come to present something, they know that they're going to get something.
But tell me about this honesty side to you, because one of the things you said earlier on, before this interview, was that you kind of say it like it is with customers.
Yes, I mean, in the design world, there's all these various levels of discussion of work. I think I mentioned earlier that somebody asked me once to make a pink colour paint that smelt like a new car. You know, there's this whole sort of level of and way of thinking. And I've met some Japanese car designers who, you know, it's amazing. I don't know how they think. You know, it's fascinating to me. And then because I am a person who I describe myself sometimes as a builder, I have to know how things work, go together, stand up, structure. So I'm very practical on one level. And also there's this other side of me, which is the creative side. So the two marry quite well. So if the client says to me, well, you know, I want X, Y, and Z to be hanging from the ceiling over there, and I say, well, we have to find somewhere else to do this show because it's not going to hold up. You know, so I'm very practical, and I can only come from a certainty of talking about something once I know it works myself. So behind the scenes, I do a lot of visualization, talking to structural engineers. You know, I need to know that this thing is going to stand up before I go in and sell it. And I don't do it. I think a lot is lost by computer presentations and those kind of drawings. I think a lot is lost. I do it. I sell my ideas in by talking about them.
Oh, do you?
And I paint pictures for people in their heads by talking about them.
Really?
And I learned to do that standing in people's houses selling them wallpaper.
Ah.
Oh, it's going to look like this. It's going to look like this.
That's brilliant. Yeah, and I think a lot of people have probably lost that skill, haven't they?
It's a communication thing, which ultimately this job is about, communicating something. But the people that pay for it, you know, because that's another, being very respectful, because there's huge sums of money involved.
Yeah.
And I think if you're going to hand someone over a lump of money like that, which they do, and they say, right, well, go ahead and do it, they need to know that their money's safe and it's going to bring a return that they've never had before. So, you know, I over the years I've become more involved with, you know, we sit down and say, well, okay, this worked and it doubled the turnover, or it didn't, or, you know.
Do you feel that pressure then, Julie? Because obviously people come to you because you get results. Does that ever make you feel fearful?
No, I get fearful. When I worked in textiles, I used to, when I worked for this company Malabar, I used to design fabric collections. And then I would go out to India and see the thousands of people sitting at looms, you know, weaving, you know, the pink colour that I think is going to sell. That's scary, because if it doesn't sell, they don't have any work. Now, my responsibility, I feel much more for the manufacturers and the people with the skills. That's where I get fearful.
Oh, that's interesting, but you're not. It's not about you or I failed.
No, because I've seen. You know those egg timers. You turn them upside down. There's a bottleneck, isn't there, where the sand comes through.
Yeah.
Well, there's millions of bits of grain of sand at one end, and then they have to come through a bottleneck and be presented at the other end. And I'm the bottleneck. So if I get it wrong, and to my knowledge, I haven't got it wrong. I haven't. You know, because I do the research. I do the work.
Is that what it's down to then, Julie, the research? Is that why you don't get it wrong? Because that was my next question, was have you ever kind of really balled up a job, you know?
Well, yes, actually. The once I did do a car show out in Shanghai. This Chinese film star was coming along to pull a ribbon, which would then reveal this car. You know, it was a Ford car. car.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all these dancers in sort of lion's head, nothing, that was a kind of an extra thrown in at the end.
Mm.
But the actress couldn't get to the bow because of all these dancers around the car.
Oh.
So I had to sort of say to these Chinese guys, great dancing, but can you go and dance on that side? And she, this woman, you know, they didn't get it. I mean, we had, you know, 15 minutes to make this big change. And then in the end, she had to sort of nip in behind all these dancers and pull the bow. So, you know, it's not everything goes according to plan at all. Yeah.
But at least when the bow, when they opened the bow, it did actually do what it was supposed to do.
Yes, it did. Oh, it all fell off, and there's the car. Bing, bang. Yeah.
Julie, where does your courage and confidence come from to do this amazing work?
Well, I just trust what I think. And I don't think that is taught in schools. I don't think people are... I trust what I think.
Have you always been like that?
Yeah. Yeah, whether it's... And I've applied it to almost every... Well, every area of my life, really.
Mm.
I mean, when my mum died, she left me some money. I thought, oh, I know, I'll go and buy some houses. Never bought a house in my life.
Mm.
And so I went on a two-week course and went off and bought some houses.
Mm.
And people, oh, no, you mustn't do that.
Mm.
And it's like, well, why not? And I've done that, and they're still there, and everything's okay.
So you just trust your own inspiration, your own judgment.
Yeah, yeah.
It kind of worked out.
Yeah, I do. And I also am quite good at seeing where other people are fearful.
Mm.
And as fear is a huge destroyer of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Huge.
Mm. Do you ever have fear?
Yeah. Yeah,
what,
I do.
How do you handle that?
Not with the concepts.
Mm.
Sometimes I feel a bit edgy when I'm going up to a client and I'm really proposing something really outrageous. yeah, we bought some missiles once, decommissioned missiles. But they were fantastic. They were so beautiful. They had these amazing graphics on it. Old Chinese missiles.
I love to get into your head, Julie, to see missiles.
But they're so powerful as objects. People
right.
just, you know, it's, and as we wheeled them into the exhibition hall, everybody just turned round, looked like we were bringing this arsenal in here. They're so powerful. And I was interested in the power of these things and the effect that it had on people.
And what was the pitch for?
The missiles. They formed part of an exhibition which I stood them all up.
Yeah.
So it was like walking into a sort of military field. And of course, for the general public, you know, you don't get to walk around missile fields.
No,
it's one of those hidden, secretive, powerful things. And yet there they all were. So you know that was great. I loved that.
Yeah. And again, it's getting a reaction, isn't it?
Yeah. And how?
Yeah.
And then
so
another.
Go on.
Well, another piece that I did was we hung ropes every foot over the top of a whole furniture stand.
Mm.
So the person walking into it had to push through the ropes to get in.
Mm.
It was either going to fail completely or it was going to be great. And they loved it. People were swinging off the ropes, you know. It was packed. You know, people really enjoyed pushing through the ropes, you know, laughing and... That's a very simple idea, but...
Were you fearful about that? Because you started off saying, you know, sometimes I do get fear.
Well, because I never do... I never put these things up before I go out to do them.
Mm.
I mean, that's... You know, I was a little bit of a practical, oh, my God, is this going to work?
Mm-hmm.
And then there comes a point where, oh, it's not going to work. So, right, what do we do? How else do we do it?
Okay. That's so
sort of
way
it.
Around.
I don't have any fear around the concept.
Okay.
And I know when I've worked it up to a point where it will create delight.
Yeah.
And I'm, okay, that's supposed to stop, and we'll go back to the client and see what they say.
So is that always part of your inspiration? How will this create delight?
Very much so.
Oh.
You know, will this alter somebody else's state? Will this change their state? Will this move them? Will this...
So it's always about the other then. It's always about the impact it's going to have.
Yeah.
So it's partly about your own inspiration, but also involved in that is always how it's going to impact people.
Really, that's my end goal. I want to see people moved, you know, and shaken out of their, you know, remember one man walking in to one of the sets, and I'd built these big towers, and they were packed full of old televisions, all playing different movies. And he just didn't know what to say. You know, he just, and I thought, oh dear, he hates it. And then he just burst out laughing, and brought all these people in, and you know, it was great. In fact, he bought them in the end, that guy.
Really?
Yeah, we called them the TV towers. He bought those. And it's like the guy who bought the elephant, you know, he was a Maharaja from India.
Oh, funny.
And it's, you know, it's currently on the way to India on a boat. I mean, a wooden elephant, and somebody from India bought it to take back there. I mean, what?
That is bonkers.
I know, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, you know, anything is possible.
But I love that. Yeah. Is that how your take on life then, Julie? Anything is possible?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and anything's possible. If I want to create something, there's nothing I can't create.
Mm.
You know, and that's what I've learned.
Mm. That's an inspiring statement. So before we finish, Julie, it's just been a delight hearing about your amazing journey and just the way you get inspiration and how it's a journey of, you know, really what you're about is delighting people in the world.
Yeah, that's it. That's
and
it.
For me, this underlying belief of anything is possible is just so inspiring. And it's what makes you a very inspiring person. And also, I love this idea of you talk people through your ideas. You paint pictures in their mind. That's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you would like to say as any other advice, in a way, for anybody who might also want to do the kind of things that you do, to kind of go into interior design or... working in events or sets or in film, anything else, advice that
yes, two think? Things really, two things. I have a healthy disrespect really for education.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I think from the work that I've done in and around art schools these days, I think there's a formula. And they teach people by formula.
Mm.
Now, there's nothing wrong with that. You can, but it doesn't accommodate or allow. I think I was very lucky with the college that I went to. They didn't teach us anything. We just had to be there.
Oh, how interesting!
And they didn't tell us what to do.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was.
And
amazing.
Now you're saying that there's they've
it's
found
more structured, and I think it kills. You know, so I would say to anyone. Don't believe everything. Don't believe everything you read in the papers. Don't believe how it's set out for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, find your own path.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard the words once: follow your bliss.
Mm.
Follow what makes you feel blissful.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way to go.
Oh God, that's just giving me goosebumps. You saying that? Because for me,
it did me when I first heard it. And
yeah.
I thought, you know, that's what I've done. If I found something interesting or somebody interesting, you know, I've allowed myself to be naturally curious about it.
So follow your bliss, and if you meet somebody or are inspired by somebody, go and follow them. Go
just
and
say
go
yes.
And work with them. Get
just
involved.
Say yes.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, Julie, it's been such a pleasure listening to your story. Thank you so much for giving me this time today, and really, I'm sure this interview will inspire other people as well. It's just wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Much appreciated.
Okay. Thanks very much, Nikki.
My pleasure. Take care.
Okay.